Imagine waking up one morning to find your bank account frozen, your job terminated, and your very identity reduced to your reproductive capacity, all because you're a woman. This is the reality that unfolds in Margaret Atwood's chilling masterpiece, where the United States transforms into the theocratic Republic of Gilead with terrifying efficiency. What makes this dystopia so haunting isn't its brutality, but its plausibility. The transition begins subtly, the president assassinated, Congress machine-gunned, the Constitution temporarily suspended. Citizens barely register these changes as permanent until it's too late, distracted by their daily routines. Freedom doesn't disappear overnight. Instead, it evaporates slowly while people focus on immediate concerns, each new restriction normalized by the previous one. As the narrator reflects, nothing changes instantaneously. In a gradually heating bathtub, you'd be boiled to death before you knew it. Women's rights vanish in sequence. First, financial autonomy, then employment, property ownership, and finally, the right to read. Small protests are quickly quashed, and the population accepts increasing restrictions as necessary security measures following terrorist attacks blamed on Islamic fanatics. This pattern mirrors historical precedents: the Nazi regime's incremental erosion of Jewish rights, Cambodia under the Khmer Rouge, China's Cultural Revolution, where society's transformation began with seemingly minor changes before escalating to wholesale persecution. The novel forces us to confront uncomfortable questions. How vigilant are we about protecting our freedoms? At what point do security measures become oppression? In Gilead, environmental degradation and plummeting fertility rates lead to the creation of the handmaid system, a perversion of the biblical story of Jacob, Rachel, and Bilhah. Fertile women deemed problematic are forcibly separated from their families and transformed into reproductive vessels for the ruling class, stripped of their identities. The monthly ceremony embodies this dehumanization through state-sanctioned rape, where the handmaid lies between the commander's wife's legs during attempted impregnation. This has nothing to do with passion or love, our narrator notes. This is purely business. Her body becomes state property, subject to strict monitoring and control. Despite evidence of sterile commanders, failed conception is always blamed on the handmaid. At the Red Center, ants break down resistance through religious indoctrination, torture, and forced testifying sessions where women confess past sins. In one session, a woman named Janine is forced to recount her gang rape while others chant her fault, weaponizing trauma to ensure compliance. Gilead exploits divisions among women through a rigid caste system. Wives, blue, manage households. Marthas, green, handle domestic work. Aunts, brown, train handmaids. Eco-wives, stripes, serve lower-class men. And unwomen, gray, clean toxic waste in the colonies. This hierarchy breeds antagonism rather than solidarity. Eco-wives despise handmaids as privileged, while Marthas, like Rita, show contempt and Cora offers condescending pity. Serena Joy represents tragic irony, a former televangelist who preached traditional values now imprisoned by those same ideals. She doesn't make speeches anymore, observes the narrator. She has become speechless. The aunts, particularly Aunt Lydia, choose limited authority over resistance. There is more than one kind of freedom, she preaches. In the days of anarchy, it was freedom too. Now you are being given freedom from. By making women complicit in oppressing each other, Gilead prevents unified resistance. Commander Fred embodies the contradictions of those who design oppressive systems yet remain unsatisfied by them. In secret evening meetings, he reveals profound loneliness, seeking connection through forbidden Scrabble games with the handmaid, despite enforcing a system where women cannot read. His moments of doubt expose Gilead's flaws. While claiming arranged marriages have always worked out just as well, his actions, seeking the handmaid's company, visiting an underground brothel, asking for genuine kisses, reveal deep dissatisfaction with the society he helped create. Despite these human moments, the commander remains blind to the suffering he perpetuates. He justifies the brothel through nature's plan while enforcing puritanical codes. And his statement that better never means better for everyone, it always means worse for some, reveals him as both architect and prisoner of a system that sacrifices connection for control. Offred preserves her humanity through small rebellions, stealing butter for lotion, fantasizing about destruction, and safeguarding memories. By recording her story as testimony, she transforms from object to subject, declaring, "I tell, therefore you are." The Mayday Underground represents organized resistance, using the French distress signal Mayday as their password. When Mayday member Ofglin commits suicide before arrest, her replacement warns Offred to forget such connections. Moira exemplifies direct resistance by escaping the Red Center, though she's later captured and sent to Jezebel's. Nick, the commander's chauffeur, embodies subtle resistance, serving as both an eye and Mayday operative who helps Offred escape. These varied forms of resistance show that human agency persists under oppression. As Offred notes, there's always something to occupy the mind. In a society that erases history, remembering becomes revolutionary. Offred clings to memories of her husband Luke, daughter, feminist mother, and friend Moira as lifelines to her former identity. These memories appear fragmentary, reflecting both trauma and her determination to preserve her past. The memories of her daughter, taken during their failed escape to Canada, haunt her most deeply. Though the child would be 8 now, Offred can only picture her at 5, drawing in yellow pajamas. When Serena Joy shows her a photograph of her daughter in white, Offred realizes the girl believes her mother is dead. I have been obliterated for her. Offred preserves cultural memory through forbidden language, savoring words during Scrabble games and reciting banned pop lyrics and poems. She catalogs vanished brand names like endangered species, each word an act of defiance. The novel itself becomes historical preservation through Offred's narrative, surviving as cassette tapes discovered centuries later. Professor Piaxoto's academic analysis in the historical notes epilogue demonstrates how personal suffering becomes abstract data, yet Offred's voice ultimately defies Gilead's attempt to silence women. The novel's power stems from historical authenticity. Every atrocity depicted has occurred in human history, from forced surrogacy to public executions. Setting these elements in a possible American future forces us to confront parallels between Gilead and contemporary issues of reproductive rights and religious extremism. The epilogue's 2195 academic conference reveals Gilead's fall while examining historical memory. Professor Piaxoto's clinical analysis of Offred's testimony demonstrates how historical distance can sanitize trauma, his focus on the commander rather than Offred mirroring the same dehumanization she endured. The story's horror lies in its plausibility, showing how societies normalize the unthinkable through incremental changes. When elements of Gilead appear in current events, in restrictions on women's autonomy, or eroding civil liberties, we face a stark truth. Dystopia isn't just fiction, but a potential reality requiring constant vigilance.